I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and wherever you are in the world, it's great to have you with us. Now, look, I'm not messing around today. We're going straight into the podcast. No preamble about our backlist of episodes and seven other series, which are all available to listen to anytime you like. No mention of previous guests, which include the likes of David Tennant, Ian Rankin, Maggie O'Farrell, David Mitchell, Kate Moss, Michael Connolly, Kit Duval, Mark Billingham, Matt Haig, Adam Kay, John Cooper Clarke, Candice Carty-Williams, Barbara Taylor Bradford, Leila Slimani, Tracy Thorne, Shazia Mirza, Helen Lederer, Tony Parsons, Taylor Jenkins Reid, Dorothy Coombsom, Lem Sissé, Brett Anderson. Not going to mention them. And certainly nothing about following us on the old social media at @odobookoff, where you can take part in book giveaways and bookish chat. We don't have time for it, so I'm going to get right down to business and welcome our guests. My first guest today is an actress and comedian who many will know from TV shows such as Ghosts and Stathlet's Flats. She was also a contestant on the really rather fabulous and innovative show Taskmaster. And she's the author of two acclaimed books of comic monologues for women and recently published Delicacy, her third book, her first non-fiction book, and we'll be talking about that today. Katie Wicks, welcome to Book Off.
Hello, thank you for having me. Apologies to your listeners for my disgusting cold.
Well, we're thrilled to have you, even though you're feeling under the weather, but smacked up on Lemsip and doing a good job of it so far.
Exactly. And I'll try and cough into my arm.
Thank you very much.
Directly into the mic.
And my second guest is an award-winning comedian who I once described as a musician, which he found both flattering and completely inaccurate. He is, however, the frontman of the six-piece band The Horn Section, who have been Edinburgh favourites for many years and have a chart-topping podcast. He's also the creator of a little show, and a BAFTA-winning show at that, called Taskmaster, which is back on our screens, praise be, and here to tell us about the new Taskmaster book. It's little Alex Horn. Hello to you.
Hi, Joe. I am so healthy.
You look it as well, I have to say.
No, but I'm 2 weeks beyond Katie's cold, so I'm just empathising. And I think when you get ill, I think it's almost worth it, because when you finally are better, you feel so alive.
Mm. Yeah.
And you sort of remember how nice it is to not be ill. So it's nice to be on your podcast, Joe.
Well, it's lovely to have you both. And I hope I don't really need to introduce you to each other, because not only do you know each other, but you spent 10 weeks with each other, didn't you,
yeah,
filming Taskmaster? Yeah. So, you know.
We did.
You're probably sick of each
cold.
Other.
Yes, I gave you a cold, I guess, in August. We saw each other in August. We had a nice evening
on
a balcony.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very romantic.
Yeah. Oh, just the two of you? Or?
There were four of us involved, actually.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that was nice. That was a real highlight of semi-lockdown that night.
Yeah, it was a night that we will treasure. And we're not going to say any more about it, Joe.
Well, look, over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about your brilliant new books. We're going to be talking about what you've been reading and enjoying recently. And of course, we have the Book Off, where each of you is going to pitch to us a book that you love that you think we should all read. But before all that, let's get down to a bit of business. And Katie, before we talk about Delicacy, I do want to mention, which I did in the intro, these comic monologue books for women. And the reason I want to mention that is because I know so many actors who use your books and
really
have found them a real revelation. And some of my friends talk about them so often, I felt like I had to bring them up, because it was such a well, brilliant idea, but also a necessary one, wasn't it?
That's so great to hear. That's so great. I mean, that was, yeah, their entire purpose, hoping that they would be useful to some performers out there, you know, particularly women. Yeah, I mean, I wrote them a long time ago now, but yeah, they came out of like friends of mine that would have auditions and they couldn't find any material that felt quite right. So I, to make a bit of money, quite honestly, yeah. I just say, oh, I'll write you something, you know. So I could, they were kind of bespoke, kind of 3 minute little kind of funny pieces. And yeah, and then the publisher just approached me about them. So yeah, I mean, I'm just so thrilled to hear that people find them, you know, useful. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Honestly, they get talked about a lot. And I wanted to bring it up and make sure it was passed on. But Delicacy is very different. It's a sort of memoir, I suppose. It's 21 moments that have defined your life, which also revolve around cake. What was the spark that made you want to write this?
Well, it helps when you're asked to write it. It really helps with deadlines, knowing it's actually going to get made, you know, be yeah. out in the world. Really helps motivation, knowing that you're just writing in a void on your own. yeah, so I was approached by, I did a short, Liam Williams, he, the amazing comedian, he used to run like a short story night, storytelling night, and I wrote a short story for that, which was quite unremarkable, really, looking back. And the publisher came to that, and then he approached me off the back of this story and said, do you have any more? Do you think it could be a book? So I was sort of forced to think of an idea, but it started off as quite a kind of twee idea. Mm. And then really tragic things started happening to me. And then, you know, suddenly the book took on this whole other life that it sort of became a bit like my own therapy to write it. So the book really changed and became a lot more thoughtful and sincere as like life events kind of were changing me, really.
Yeah.
And they were changing the kind of book I wanted to write. And also I was reading so much more because I sort of wrote, I wouldn't recommend writing a book this way, because when I got the commission, I thought, I don't know if I can write. I don't really have a voice. So I just read so much, particularly women's memoir, to try and work out the sort of language of book, like how books worked and what I liked and what really thrilled me and the kind of style I liked and the authors I love, which was a really, I mean, I'm just so grateful. That's almost been more exciting to have that, this new kind of small feminist library in my
yeah.
house.
Yeah.
That's as exciting to me as having a book. To discover what my taste is and what my voice was really, yeah, kind of life-changing, actually.
And discovering maybe these writers, these women that you might not have heard of before through
their... Oh, completely, yeah, I didn't have a clue. I would just read things that were kind of, you know, no offence, on the Booker long list, because someone had sort of said these are good.
Yeah.
And they are, but they're not necessarily the things that speak to me. You know, you have to... I think it's brilliant when it's quite an organic thing of, you know, you read one author and they reference another and you immediately have to go off and then read that writer and, you know, work out why they would like each other's work. So
yes, and that is one of the great things about nonfiction, particularly, is that leads you on to so many other books, memoirs and essays and nonfiction. We'll come back and talk about Delicacy a little bit more in a mo. Alex, if I could bring you in, because I enjoyed very much the first episode of the 12th series of Taskmaster. It's back on the telly. How are we feeling?
Thanks, Joe. It's always weird when something goes out that you worked on a long time ago. So that series was filmed 6 months ago, I think.
Right.
So it's a relief when it finally goes to air. And it was filmed in pretty heavy restrictions times. So everyone is spaced apart and there's no audience. Whereas we actually finished on Wednesday, the latest series, and we're back to normal with a full audience and everyone sat next to each other. So I don't think you noticed that watching it, but oh my word, I just pressed emergency SOS on my phone.
Oh, hello.
Oh, stop. Sorry.
Is that like your fibbing alarm's gone off?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you've just told a lie or something.
Sorry, Joe. So yes, it's lovely to have the audience back in the next series, but this one is one of our favourite collections of five people. I guess I like it when the show's on air, because people watch it. Sorry, Joe. I was thrown by this alarm I've never heard before. Well, it's because somebody phoned me while you were asking me a question. So I
you just managed to insult both of us by saying it's on telly and it's your favourite people.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Katie. I literally, so well there was no
thought audio shit, and these are the best people we've
audio
had.
Audio shit, and I hate all previous guests.
Your series, Katie, was the BAFTA winning series because you guys were the best.
Do you know what? That's true. I did get you a BAFTA. And...
Yeah. No, Joe, Taskmaster is a weird thing in my life because it's sort of constant as much as my wife and children. It's just always there at the moment because it is on the telly, and it has sort of infected people's lives a bit, and families play it whether or not I'm involved. You know, they make their own tasks. It's got a life of its own. So so it's always there in the background.
It's always there.
Yeah, it's very odd because it didn't exist 7 years ago.
No, it's mad, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, and it's definitely not me. You know, I get a lot of credit for it, but firstly...
What was the origins of it?
The origins, Katie, is that... And you won't like this. 12 years ago, when my first son was born, I didn't go to Edinburgh. So instead, I sat at home while Tim Key won the Perrier Award, and I had all conflicting emotions. Yeah. So I said, all right, then.
I loved it. I don't know why you thought I wouldn't hate that.
No, well, the thing was, Katie, I then emailed my 20 best comedian friends, and you weren't one of them at
that's
the time.
That's fine. We didn't know each other that well by then.
And I said to those 20 people, do you want to do this thing? I'll set you a task once a month, and you have to do it, just for a laugh, in Edinburgh. And they didn't know who each other was. It was all secretive. And that's the origin story, Katie.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Yeah, excellent. I did enjoy it, very much so. And much like a book, like you were saying, you write a book and sort of move on to the next thing, which might be a book or the next thing you're working on. And then, 6 months later, a year later, people like me are asking you about it. And that's the same for Taskmaster. So you've actually finished series 13, is what you're saying.
Well, finishing is... I finished it because we finished the studio, but it's now going into the edit, which is a whole new world. You know, that's another six-week process. So, I mean, I think there's a phrase for it in telly, but it's definitely a three-part structure. There's the doing the tasks, then there's the filming the studio, and then you make the show in the edit. And I used to be very involved in that, but the team know what they're doing far more than me. So I watch cuts, but I don't go into the little room anymore.
They've banned you, have they, from that?
I'm so useless in that little room. And there is some similarities.
Toilet.
Yeah, the toilet. I'm so useless in the toilet. I know there's that white, the paper. I've seen the paper. I don't know what you do with it.
It's all changed in the toilet these days. I don't know why anything is anymore.
No, the editing bit is bloody so hell. Slow. It's so painstaking. And I don't have the brain for that or the patience for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So instead you wrote a book about it.
Well, I wrote the book in... there's two Taskmaster books and they're not just spin-offs. Though I've written every word of them and have really... Actually, that is the painstaking bit for me. I really care about them. Yeah. But this one was written with my friend Dan Trelfer, who's one of the editors on the show, but was also a writer in his own right. He writes very funny books about football. And it was during one of the lockdowns we spent a lot of time making this book because it's a treasure hunt. It's a sort of homage to Masquerade.
I thought it would be.
As well as, I always have it next to me. I didn't need it for this podcast. Yeah, this is not the book that I'm talking about later on, but it is a wonderful book.
It is.
So half the book is tasks like the previous book. It's just tasks that you can do at home because that's what people want and that's what scout groups want and classrooms and stags and hens, weirdly. But the other half, literally the other half of the pages, so the opposite page to the task, there's a clue on every single page. 100 clues, and once you solve all those clues, you get information. You've got to use that information to eventually find the location of a Taskmaster trophy, which is hidden somewhere in the world.
And we should say, because there will be people, unbelievably, who won't have been born listening to this when the Masquerade book came out, or indeed know what it was. And this was a book that there was like a golden
hair. There it is.
Hair buried.
Made by the author himself. He was an amazing artist, and so he works on all sorts of materials. 18 karat gold, dazzlingly adorned with precious stones. 1979 it came out, so I was born, but only just. I don't think you were, Kate.
I wasn't born. No. But I've never read it, but I've heard, I think I heard a podcast about it, about where it was.
You know, there's not much to read. It's a picture book.
It's sort of a beautiful illustration.
It's all to do with where the eyes are looking in the end.
Oh, lovely. Oh, yes.
It's impossible. Even when you've got the answer, it's impossible. And it took them eight months to solve it because his ex-partner's new partner cheated and found out the location. But there were two teachers who did solve it in about the same time. So I'm kind of hoping mine will have a similar lifespan.
How will we know when someone... I mean, I guess, what, you're just going to get a message with a photo saying I found it?
No. So ours is a sort of updated version. And first, we wanted people all over the world to be able to do it. And also people who aren't able to get out of the house for whatever reason, whether it's a lockdown or because they're unable to physically. So we didn't want to limit it to people with spades. There's various levels. To get to a certain level, we will be alerted via something on the internet.
Uh-huh.
And then I will get in touch with them and find out where they are and how to... So whoever gets to that stage first, I will then find out where they are. And this is all new information for the readers, by the way. I've not told anyone this bit of the information. At the moment, they've just got the book, which is all the clues are in there. And people are insane. It's been out for a week and a day. And they've done so much work on it. And they've sort of clubbed together and not slept. But so far, we're keeping them at bay. So it's really weird. It's a really weird way to write a book. Because normally with a book, I don't know about you, Katie, you release it and you don't really know what's going on. You don't know if people have read it. You don't know what people think. You know, things drip back to you and people text you. But in general, you don't know. Whereas I'm getting a lot of messages, a lot of cross people, because there's a mistake in the book and everyone's saying, was that a clue or was that a mistake? And it is just a mistake.
But you sort that out for the reprints?
I think we're going to own the mistake and, you know.
There was a mistake in mine.
Really, I love a mistake.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my best mistake? I did a book about bird watching, and the word "with" in one of the pages was spelt WICUSTJEREMYSTRONGH. So it was Wickust Jeremy Strongth.
It's close.
It's quite a good mistake. It said I went Wickust Jeremy Strongth, my dad, to the nature reserve.
That's a great mistake. I think there should be a mistake in every book.
Yeah, it's probably the longest fun, spelling of with. Yeah.
Anyway. It's fascinating because it's a book that's giving back directly, whereas I think in the case of, say, Delicacy, you know, Katie, it's sort of quite a strange thing when it actually does go out into the world and you know that it's in the hands of people, and because it's a very honest book. I mean, it's very funny in places, it's very dark in others. And I wondered, you said therapeutic, but was it also quite a hard book to write?
It's giving back in another way, isn't it?
I suppose
treasure hunty way. unless the treasure's in your heart, in your own heart. The message in my book. It definitely felt there was like a twinge of. It felt shaming and exposing to put something so honest out into the world for like the first maybe 10 days. And then really quickly it was like, hang on, did I make that list of 10 books recommended by, you know, this person? Like, oh, how? It really quickly just moved into like my ego screaming about the internet. So it felt really scary. You know, I thought it was going to be much worse in my own head. But then also I think because it was released during lockdown, I think it would have, I think I couldn't turn up and do any events in the flesh. And I imagine actually having, because I've heard the poet Rebecca Goss wrote an amazing piece about when she wrote a really personal collection of poems that would do with grief, and she hadn't thought about what it would be like to have, you know, members of the public come up to her and be in the same room as someone who knows this really personal thing about you. And I've been sort of protected from that, in that I get like really incredible messages, you know, on Insta and so on. And it's a great feeling to know it's been useful to someone to write all this down. But I feel quite sort of protected from, you know, what people think about it in a way.
Katie, I'm not a member of the public, I suppose, for you. Is it different knowing that your friends now know a lot more about you?
Because that was weird. Yeah. There's some friends who, I don't know if you have this, but I think I have, it's changing, but I think I have some friendships where there's just this unconscious agreement that this is mostly what we do in this friendship. And then, so I'll have friends that are more like, you know, it's lighter and it's more, we sort of avoid talking about our feelings too much and it's just, you know, jokes. And then I have friends where the opposite is true. And I feel like that's somehow been leveled out a bit more because, there was some, when I was writing some things, I thought, yes, there are some things that even my closest friends don't know. And I think it was quite difficult for some of them to read about it.
Yeah, it sort of made me think I wish all our we should all write a book so we don't have to have these conversations. So we just all know exactly everything.
Absolutely. Like if I could just give this to someone and then, you know, say we'll chat, read this and then we'll get to know each other. but then also, you know, like there's so much I left out. There's so much I would never write about. And those sort of boundaries in my head were really clear before writing. And, you know, I wanted it to be a more kind of poetic response to stuff that happened than you know, straightforward narrative. So, yeah, no, it was difficult. But it's funny, when, like, the emotional, like, labour, of course, but then also just writing a book and getting the words right was actually more difficult, I think, than, because really quickly it became like, yeah, like, I've read this account so many times now of this sad thing that I'm just now thinking about the language and, like, the craft of it.
You mentioned, you know, reading a lot of other memoirs and sort of trying to find that voice, and I think you really have done it because I think it's a really different, original, very fresh sort of take on a memoir, and I think it's very
Thank you.
I do think it speaks, you know, very much like nothing else that I've read in that sort of space. So you have done that.
I also
opinion.
Think it's a very
Thank
good
you.
Book.
Thanks very much.
I think it's extraordinary. I think the cake element is really interesting. If you don't mind me talking about it, Katie.
Yeah, of course.
Because I didn't know what to expect going into it, and on the cover there's a big cake. But I'd sort of forgotten about them, and every time they pop, well, as the book went along, they recede, I suppose. But they're always, it's a really nice device, but it's not at all what I thought it was going to be. I guess the whole book wasn't what I thought it was going to be, but it's very delicately handled without wanting to use that word.
That's been quite difficult actually, is like realizing that it wasn't, having to sort of push against expectation, and there's nothing I can really do about that because. I knew the sort of book I wanted to write, and I didn't want it to be. I think it's more literary than people were expecting, and that's just kind of quite depressing that no one thinks I was capable of that.
Yeah, memoir is a funny genre because I think of memoir as just autobiography, celebrity autobiography nowadays, and it's definitely not that.
Well, it's interesting because it comes back to the stuff I read. So, like, essay memoir was a kind of genre I wasn't really aware of, which really influenced me. In some ways, I feel like if I specifically pointed to all the different books I read and someone also read them, then they would be less impressed.
Right. Yeah, you probably have introduced me to a whole genre, if I'm honest. I didn't know about essay memoir.
Yeah, like people like Eulabis, incredible, and Maggie Nelson and people like that.
Yeah.
Are they better than you?
Oh yeah, much
oh right, I'll read
them
then.
Yeah. I mean, less jokes, but they're much better than me.
Fewer jokes, Katie.
Quite a few years ago, there was this surge is not the right word, but there was a sort of there were a few books that came out and came to prominence, which were this narrative nonfiction, you know, which brought in nature and grief. Like I'm thinking of H is for Hawk. I'm thinking of The Outrun by Amy Liptrot. I love that book, and it was absolutely stunning. And I think those books actually did something. They created a shift in publishing and in reading. You know, things that we'd maybe seen years and years ago with someone like Susan Sontag or something, who had a very specific way that broke the mold of memoirs, and they've done that. And now we're here, and I think, you know, I really do think memoirs are becoming not just, as you say, Alex, the sort of, here's the stories from my life, just like, this is what I did and here's when I was hanging out in China Whites, but it's like, actually, you know, something a bit more poignant about it. They are a bit more literary, and I think that's a really good thing, and I do think more audiences are coming to them now because of it.
Yes.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're
so
right.
I agree.
We both agree with you, I think, Joe.
I did read a lot of sort of hybrid things, I suppose, and maybe that's your best option when trying to create something that feels original. You know, like I'd never really read any prose poetry before, and now I'm kind of obsessed with it. And and also, like, you know, micro fiction or flash fiction, I suppose they call it sometimes, also is like a huge inspiration, which is why so many of the chapters are really short, because I have a short attention span. And the idea of like a really large structure really freaks me out. So I like to make everything digestible and small. But I agree. I think it did. I need to read H for Hawk.
Yeah, do read that, Helen MacDonald. It's really very good. And there's if I may, I'd like to recommend another book I read recently because the author is on this very podcast. It's called Fishtown. It's by John Gerard Fagan, and it is...
I'm writing it down.
It's the chapters are so short, you know, they really are, they're almost poems. And I just think that would be right up your street, Katie. It's really interesting, different...
Great title.
Yeah.
Have you read much Lydia Davis?
No.
Oh, she's the queen of short.
Okay. Oh,
short fiction. She's unbelievable.
Let's all write something down. You're not writing anything down,
Alex.
It's
going to be on the podcast. I'm going to listen to the podcast. Oh, yeah. Luckily, you are recording this.
I think I pressed it. Yeah.
We don't need to write anything down anymore because everything is recorded.
Have you? What have you been reading and enjoying recently, Alex? If you've had time to read, maybe you have.
Well, I have, but I mean, literally, the last book I read was Delicacy, which is slightly awkward. And also, I am in this weird phase of the year when you get sent a lot of books by other comedians. So I'm reading Phil Wang's book Side Splitter, which I don't think actually come out yet, is it?
No.
I'm not sure. Well, you get sent it and you sort of have to, you don't have to, but I guess you're sent it with the idea that you will then praise it online or give a quote. And I've got Josh Widdicombe's book. But anyway, I'm reading Phil's, and it's really good. I need to make it clear that I'm not very good at reading, or at least I'm quite tired at night, so I read a page and I'm gone. And I used to have a bit of stand-up about how I would often, and it was true, I would pick up a book, read it and fall asleep, and the next day I would look at it, not know what had happened, because I was so sleepy, so I'd go back a page, but fall asleep, so I'd eventually go backwards in the book to the beginning.
You need some short stories.
I think I do. I will take some recommendations from this, but no, I'm not in a great reading phase, but Delicacy really did do it for me, and I don't want to keep going on about how good it was. But
I do. I wish. Yeah. I'm here.
But I like reading for research, I suppose. That's when I get most of my reading done. So if I've got a project, so I'm trying to write a book, so that's fine to talk about, a children's book about geology. It's quite serious and boring.
That's so wholesome.
Well, my granddad was a geologist. That was his job. So it's sort of about him, really. It's about a boy and his granddad, so it's completely about him.
Yeah.
So I'm doing lots of research. I'm reading lots of geology books, and that's kind of what I like doing.
Okay.
So I haven't read a lot of fiction for a long time.
Yeah. And what about you, Katie? Obviously, you've read lots of memoirs, but that was a while ago. So what have you been enjoying recently?
Well, I do. I got really into audio books in lockdown. Because I'm quite bad at reading, actually.
It's not easy.
Yeah, it's really strange. I mean, I know lots of people talked about that it was harder in lockdown to concentrate. And also I think I make the mistake of reading really intense things just before I go to bed. And then it was just, you know, I'm really bad at sort of light reading. It feels like it's always something. The book I just listened to was pretty intense, but it was incredible. It's called The Devil You Know, and it's by Dr. Gwen Adshead. And actually, there's another writer. Let me look up her name. Oh, Eileen Horn, friend of the show. And it's called Stories of Human Cruelty and Compassion. And she she's a psychiatrist, and it's about her time in Broadmoor, and so she gives therapy to, you know, the people who've done the most horrendous crimes you can imagine, and it's like 11 stories of, yeah, you know, these extraordinary encounters that she has with these kind of people that have, yeah, locked away for doing something,
wow,
in quotes, evil. And yeah, just sort of, I suppose she always kind of starts by sort of saying, how do you think we kind of got here? And it's just incredible to, you know, every story is completely different, and it's all, wow, heartbreaking and awful, as you can imagine. And she just makes a really strong case about how, you know, mental health stuff is never preventative. It's always like, okay, right, well, you've done this thing now, so let's get you some therapy. Where it should have happened, you know, long before, I guess. But just the stories are just unbelievable, and really hard to listen to. I knew it would be completely harrowing, but sometimes I'm just really, you know, in the mood for that. Like, it's really cathartic.
What's your listening process, Katie? Because I don't think I can listen to an audiobook unless I'm driving. That's my system.
Oh, right, but I can't drive.
I wouldn't trust myself to... I know you can't drive because I made you drive a steamroller, and that will haunt me forever.
It's the best day of my life.
No, having read your book, that made me even more full of regret. Anyway, do you trust yourself? Can you just sit calmly and listen and not get distracted by other things?
Well, it's like you're saying about rereading the same page. It's really embarrassing. There are times where I swear to God I've rewound the same bit about 11 times. And it's the same point in the story. It's really interesting. There must be a word or something in the story that's made my brain completely go off. Because then I come to at the same point. And I rewound so many times, and my brain just kept doing this funny association where it would hear the word butterfly. And then I'd go, oh God, I've daydreamed again at exactly the same point again. So that I'd find that quite a lot. But yeah, my dream scenario for an audiobook is kind of like, you know, banal, like a bit of washing up, a sort of banal task. When I'm
I like a walk. Yeah, walking, yeah, audiobook as well is good, isn't it?
The problem, I think, walking around in London, it's too much sensory overwhelm. I've realised if I'm in a wood or something, or a car park, some like featureless environment, then I can listen.
What an extraordinary way to read a book. Wandering around a car park with the author saying it into your ears.
This is 2021. This is it. This is
so
what we do.
About the car park. I mean, yeah, that is... That would... Yeah, some just like a, you know, a box. But yeah, they're really... yeah. So, and also, should I say something else I read? Or is it one?
Please do.
There's an amazing essay I read called Time Lived Without Its Flow by Denise Riley. And
great title.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And it's all about the effect that grief has on time, and it's really extraordinary. And it's not really about grief, it's more about this kind of strange altered way of living after grief. And she almost kind of says that sort of cliche of time stopping, she thinks it's more like you're kind of outside of time. And I really remember, like, when I went to on a sort of mini holiday not long after my mum died, and someone said to me, you know, did you have a nice time? And I thought, actually, it was like I was so, you know, not kind of present, because I guess the shock lasts such a long time that I remember sort of thinking, oh, I actually don't think I was experiencing time like in a normal way. So I didn't really have any time. It wasn't good or bad. I just wasn't really there. So that it's you know, it's really incredible. She's an amazing writer and a philosopher and a poet, so it's better than me saying sentences about it.
But time lived without its flow.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really profound. Right. And also what was really sweet is Max Porter wrote the thing at the beginning, and he said that when he read it he put his book in the bin.
Oh wow.
Which I really respect, really admire.
I'm not gonna read that then.
Yeah.
Halfway through mine.
I'm going to get your boo out of the bin now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you for those recommendations. And it's time now for The Book Off, which is where you're going to give us another recommendation. In fact, you're going to champion and pitch to us a book that you love, that you think everyone should read. Before we find out what they are, we should decide who goes first and who goes second. So, Katie, would you like to step up first, or do you want to see what Alex has got?
I don't mind going first.
Okay, very good.
I mean, I wrote something down. Is that really sad?
Not at all.
I have to refer to my notes.
Not at all. And you both have 3 minutes uninterrupted. You don't have to use your 3 minutes. Many people don't, but often people just wang on and reach the 3 minutes quite easily. Now, we usually give our guests the option of whether they're getting rung out or honked out. And I think it's only appropriate, Alex, that you have the bicycle horn, I would think,
yes, please,
for your 3 minutes.
Yes,
excellent.
So,
Katie, you will get the bell. And before we set the timer, Alex, which book are you putting forward for The Book Off?
I'm putting forward a book called Palindromes and Anagrams by Howard W. Bergerson.
Palindromes and...
Palindromes and Anagrams. By the way, I'm not very combative. And,
no, don't worry.
I think I'll probably agree with Katie's
well, I can't
choice.
Read my own handwriting, so yeah. Between us.
And Katie, which book are you putting up?
It's called Bluets or Bluets by Maggie Nelson.
We don't even know how it's pronounced.
There's a thing in the book about how you pronounce it.
Right, well, I'm putting 3 minutes on the clock for you, Katie, to tell us all about
Bluets.
Over to you.
Does the bell go when there's like, can I have it like 10 seconds before the
end? I'll give you a 10 second warning if you want.
Yeah.
No one's ever asked for it before, but yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
It's fine. Oh God, sorry. My notes are all like a mess. Okay, sorry. Right, I'll start now. Okay, Bluets by Maggie Nelson is a really extraordinary, unique book because it completely defies genre and that it's somewhere between prose, poetry and memoir. And it's set out as a sort of series of numbered sort of meditations, propositions, she calls them, which is inspired by Wittgenstein's philosophical investigations. And it's really the story of Maggie Nelson falling in love with the colour blue, which sounds quite unusual. And she's sort of collecting blue things that she sees, and she's being kind of gifted blue objects and making lots of discoveries about the colour blue and its historically and so on. But it's also about heartbreak and pain and divinity and philosophy. And it's really... extraordinarily written and very sort of profound, and these sort of propositions are arranged very carefully, very artfully, so that you kind of end up somewhere incredible by the end. And I felt changed by reading it. Like, her mind is so incredible, and she's so articulate, and she's sort of terrifyingly bright, but it's a mixture of academic language with sort of very everyday things. But so it's sort of philosophy against things that are very kind of banal and ordinary. She writes about heartbreak and pain, she's just so articulate, very sort of precise. Nothing's taken for granted. Like, she really loves investigating every thought she's having and taking it through to this really profound conclusion somewhere. She's just very wise. I quote the book in my book because I'm kind of obsessed with it. And she made me want to read philosophy, which I tried. Yeah, it's like this amazing mixture of sort of heart and head, which I think is what I want from a book. She was a poet first, so it's like this poet's mind with also philosophy. So it's just really profound. But it's, yeah, so it's about the colour blue, but it's also about lots of other things. And what was I going to say? Yeah, she's really, it's really kind of, yeah, thick and packed with ideas. So it's very kind of dense and memorable. So many things about it have stayed with me. And she's really kind of, like, she said in an interview that she's kind of interested in her own thinking.
10-second warning.
Which I just think is an amazing thing to say. It's an amazing thing for a woman to say. I love it. It's just such a bold statement to just be interested in your own mind. And that's what you want to write about. Yeah, Bluets by Maggie Nelson. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Very, very good. Yeah, a round of applause.
Oh, thanks.
Loved it. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about that in about 3 minutes' time. But you can have a little breather. Have another Lemsip if you want, Katie. So I'm putting 3 minutes back on the clock for you, Alex.
A Strepsil, sorry.
Have a Strepsil.
I don't want to make a noise, so I'll get out of this little packet.
I think you should make noise throughout mine. Really?
No, you don't want to hear the sound of me sucking on a lozenge, though.
So it's 3 minutes on the clock for you then, Alex, to tell us about palindromes and anagrams. Over to you.
I've chosen this book because it's the book that I have read the most times in my life, and it's the only book probably that I keep coming back to. And I'm sort of ashamed it's not a novel. I wanted to say On the Road by Jack Kerouac, because when I was 18, I thought that's going to be the book that defines me. And then I did try to read it again, and I sort of was slightly embarrassed at myself. Anyway, look, this is a book. It's not a novel. It is like Katie's, genre defying, because it's more like an academic work, I suppose. But it's very, very readable and approachable. I read it as a 10-year-old. My mum gave it to me because my mum and I were into words. We're into language. She's one of these ladies who can do cryptic crosswords. And we used to watch Countdown together every single day, and it was our thing. And I think this book got me into comedy because it got me into language and it got me into writing. And all it is a collection of the best palindromes and anagrams in the world. But they've all been introduced in methodical and funny ways by Howard W. Bergeson, who's the expert on the subject. There are short chapters. I think it got me into poetry, because I find poetry, or definitely found poetry, off-puttingly difficult. Whereas the poems in this are interesting because the poems are palindromic. So I'm going to give you an example, I think, at some point. But the first, it's not just, palindromes don't have to be a single word. If you don't know what a palindrome is, it's the word that's the same backwards, like Eve or Anna. But this has whole, like, it's a drinking song here, which is palindromic. Avid as a diva, O gin, on I go. And I was really it felt like a magic trick to me as a kid. I can open it, the book is covered in my little sort of notes of just things I found interesting, like schoolmaster could be turned into the classroom. Sauciness causes sin. These are all anagrams of each other. Rescue, secure. Just really, they feel important. They feel like it's not an accident. Postponed, stopped, no. Those are anagrams of each other. And there's a whole story about cigarettes, and it ends with the tragic magic of setaragic. Setaragic is cigarettes backwards. And other people can quote Shakespeare, but I can quote this book, I suppose. It introduces you to a man called J.A. Lyndon, who is the greatest linguist in my mind. He's done all the best palindromes. And they do have a sort of deeper truth. A good palindrome, like the Canal Panama one that we all think we know, it says something. It's not just a linguistic trick, I suppose. But there's chapters in it. Oh, is that the end?
Oh, that's the end.
Oh, I could have gone on for another hour.
Oh, I knew you weren't anywhere near finished there. I felt
no,
bad.
I didn't plan it. This is probably my problem. But anyway, I said some things.
I feel like I could. You were mid sentence, so maybe you want
to. Well, there's
to
one chapter I would
thought.
Really recommend. He did a thing where he wrote a poem, Howard W. Bergeson, and then stripped it out. So he wrote down a list of all the words in alphabetical order and sent those words to two other poets to see what poems they would come up with.
Hmm.
So you end up with three poems that all work as poems. You wouldn't know which was the original, but they're all completely different. And I just found that really fascinating. And, you know, it's not deep, but it's really fun. It's fun and interesting, and academic is the wrong word.
Brilliant. Well, it sounds absolutely fascinating. In fact, both of these do. And to go back to Bluett, I just love this description of it from you, Katie, and how important it is, how important it seems to you, and, you know, that you quoted it in the book and you're sort of obsessed with it. It's made you want to read philosophy. So it's obviously a really powerful book, as you've described. And I bloody love the colour blue as well. So I feel like, yeah, I do. Blue and orange for me. Have to, like, on probably equal measure. And it just sounds so unique, because it, you said it defies genre, it's poetry, it's prose, it's memoir, it's all these things. I, you know, just hearing you talk about it, it's made me think, oh, I really, really want to pick that up.
It's I'd never read anything like it. I mean, no. The Argonauts is the book I guess she's most known for.
Yes.
Which was, yeah, like, incredible. And her new, I can't wait to read her new book, although there's been some controversy about it on Twitter. But
there's controversy about everything on Twitter, though, isn't there? So, I mean, you know, yeah. I just don't engage with it anymore.
It's really, like, her mind is just, it's so kind of agile, and I've never... I mean, maybe, you know, it just shows how much I haven't read, but I just haven't read I haven't encountered a mind like hers before. Mm. It's really, it's such a, it's like, it's very poetic and it's very emotionally complex, but I think it's because she's really kind of strict and vigorous with her thinking. So it never sort of feels like someone, one of my best friends is an English teacher. Sorry, I paused. He said, but that's not quite what they do, but I couldn't think of the right term for it. It's slightly different from that. But they were, they said something the other day about, you know, that poetry, it's never okay that a poem doesn't sort of make sense. And we were sort of talking about that before I read poetry, I think I thought you just read it and get a kind of sense, and it's okay if you don't understand. But I think I've changed my mind now. I think you should understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like this really, yeah, it's just so sort of rigorous, even though she's talking about these quite abstract concepts and feelings. You never get the sense that she hasn't just thought, like, investigated everything she's saying so carefully. And even even when choosing, you know, a word, and I mean, I would spend hours on one word sometimes. I got really obsessive about it. But she, even there's even points where she goes into, like, the origins of different words, and then says, this is why I chose this word, because actually it's closer to this other word. And it's kind of fascinating.
It just sounds so rich and
so
interesting.
And also so much stuff about the colour blue that I didn't realise, you know, right. From all different aspects of life and history. And there's a bit where she talks about that scientists decided that the colour of space is actually, like, more like blue. Well, there's a sort of thing about that the universe might be blue, essentially. And then by the end, someone else says, no, actually, I think it's grey. So, like, the idea of that the universe has, like, a colour, like a sort of base colour, is quite interesting.
Yeah, it is.
And, it's really incredible.
Well, it sounds amazing. And I have to say, Alex, Palindromes and Anagrams also sounds great. It didn't from the title, and yet you have absolutely sold me this book. What I loved most about your pitch is that this book got you into comedy and into poetry, and was sort of something that you shared with your mum when you were younger. I just think, like, this is an amazing book for you, right? This is a very important book.
I've never seen it quoted anywhere or mentioned by anyone. So I don't really want to share it with anyone either, but it's always been, and it's the same copy I've got. It's just one little plastic, you know, it's just like a experiment, I think. So it's a quirk, you know, and it's not a sit down and read it in the bath book. It is a coffee table, but, you know, but I mean that in the right way. It should be on the table near where you sit. You know, not where your guests sit, but just where you sit so you can grab it occasionally.
And this, I love that you've got, you know, it's covered in notes from over the years of you,
yeah,
you going back to it and using it and being fascinated. I mean, that's brilliant. I just think that's, it's, well, it sounds so good.
I like it that there's notes made by, you know, 15-year-old me. I wrote, when I was on my gap year, I went to America and I wrote a poem, a palindromic postcard to my parents because it started with Al and ended with LA, or the other way around. And it was nonsense, and I don't think they were impressed, but I've got that postcard somewhere. So it really did infect, you know, really did get infect me.
And I do think, you know, when things, I mean, when academic-y styles of books and writing are accessible, that's the dream, right? Because that brings in a whole new audience, and we can get something out of it rather than being put off by it, which is often the case with something too deep. But
definitely, I mean, this is aimed at, this will only appeal to a very specific sort of person, I think. It's not got broad appeal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you do like crosswords and puzzles, then you'll love it.
Well, you've sold it to me. But I can only take one home with me. And I've got a... It's a tough one, but... I think I'm going to take Bluets home. I think I'm going to say Katie's got it.
It's like Room 101.
Why can't you take two, Joe? I'll send it to you, then you'll have it.
Oh, then I can't do anything about it then, can I?
Am I ruining the format?
I mean, the format is really just a very, you know, it's a very loose format.
I'm going to come and shout this book at you.
I like the phrase introducing a palindrome. Made me think about someone like emceeing on stage and up next, bringing on a palindrome.
There was a comedian called Agraman who chose his name because it's an anagram of anagram.
Oh, wow. I like the phrase tragic magic very much.
Yeah, the tragic magic.
Tragic magic.
I wrote that down.
But none of this is enough to persuade Joe to take my
book. Well, I've sort of made the decision now as well, haven't I? So I can't go back because that would just be weak.
Has there been any show where someone's chosen the same book? Has that never happened?
Not in the same programme, but there have been two examples of two different guests choosing the same book, yes. And one of those is... Donna Tartt's The Secret History.
Oh,
I got told to read that yesterday.
I've never read that.
By Sophie Duker told me to read that.
Really?
There you go. It is a wonderful book. I mean, you really should read that, actually.
It's funny, that happens with books, isn't it? That they pop into conversations a number of times in a week. Oh, right, yeah. I will read it. And not a new book either. That's
no. Okay. And I think it's like 30 years old now, which just makes me feel awful. But it's so... Yes, you must read it. It's so good. And I am very intrigued by the Howard W. Bergson, Alex. It's, you know, but I think maybe the blue swung it for me.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
You know. Bring Me the Head of the Taskmaster by Alex Horn is out now. It's published by Ebury. And Delicacy by Katie Wicks is also out now. It's published by Headline. It's been an absolute pleasure having you both on. Thanks for your book recommendations. Thanks for your time. And here's to in more in-person, audience-y things in the future.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, Katie. Get well
Thank
soon.
You very much. So nice to see you both.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.